You're listening to The Donna Drake Show. Join us weekly as Donna talks with celebrity entertainers, sports legends, top journalists, business moguls, and everyday heroes, sharing their stories of triumph, inspiration, and perseverance. Hosted by international award-winning creative artist, writer, producer, actor, and influencer, Donna Drake. All right, let's live it up with Donna Drake.
Hey, it's Harlan Friedman from Soul Free and The Donna Drake Show, and we are here on the red carpet at Village East Cinema's Tribeca 2023 for the North American premiere of The League, an incredible documentary about the Negro Baseball League. It was so important, both financially and as a community builder, and it laid the footsteps for people like Jackie Robinson to break barriers and for baseball to become what it is today. Stay tuned. All right, we're here with Harold Reynolds on the red carpet, The League. Harold, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing great, you?
Excellent, excellent. We were here about a year ago for the world premiere of The Captain.
Yes.
You know, slightly different location, but same red carpet thing.
Absolutely. A little different movie, too.
Yeah. And I, you know, was going to say, The Captain doesn't happen without this movie.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think any, black baseball doesn't happen in the major leagues without this movie. Mm-hmm. And that's what the movie's about. It's really the origin of the Negro Leagues and moving through black baseball and really what it meant to American culture.
Yes.
You know, we look at baseball as one thing, but the effect it had on so many neighborhoods and people around that community was a big impact to the sport.
The economic impact, I mean, I just know from locally, New Jersey, you know, where Hinkley Field just reopened. I mean, we're even seeing a reemergence of it now. It's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it really is. And you go back and figure, you know, 1930s and 40s when it was thriving and you saw all those great players come. I'm going to watch them play, you know,
so people
are going to be in that area, they're going to be working, they're going to be going to games, and so it's really, really well documented and really well done.
Yeah. I remember as a kid growing up, I mean, I was a baseball kid, I still am, but, you know, learning of guys like Hank Aaron and Willie Mays and Babe Ruth as a young man, but then you heard about these superheroes named Josh Gibson and Satchel Paige and Cool Papa Bell, and you had to dive deeper to find out who these guys were. I mean, what's it mean for these guys to finally be getting their flowers now in this film?
Well, I think the one thing the film does, you see them in actual footage, actual action. It's almost like they're mythical characters, right? But now you get to see them. And real quick, one of the guys, my favorite guy is Oscar Charleston. And Buck O'Neill used to tell me about Oscar Charleston. Yeah. I asked Buck O'Neill, I said, who's the best player? He said, put it this way. When Willie Mays was coming up, they said he's got a chance to be the next Oscar Charleston. That's the kind of player he was.
And these are the great stories that deserve to be told. And I'm so glad we're telling it in film tonight. And you still tell it, you know, all the time on the MLB Network. And who knows where else soon.
No doubt. You got to keep spreading it. Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, Harold. Great seeing you, brother.
It doesn't happen without you doing things like this, so thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
Appreciate it.
Right. We're here with Nina Dobrev here at the world premiere of The League. Nina, how you doing tonight?
I'm well. I'm very excited. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. I know, obviously, your on-camera career, Degrassi, Vampire Diaries, some of the biggest TV shows of all time. How does it feel to be on the other side of things now?
It's really empowering, it's really interesting, it's a whole new world for me. I'm just so incredibly excited that it's been years that we've been trying to get this movie off of the ground, and I'm so, so proud of it. Can't wait for people to finally see it, yeah.
And you're actually one of the judges this year at Tribeca.
Yeah, so I'm a judge at the Tribeca Film Festival, and then separately this documentary I executive produced, along with these incredible human beings and Questlove, and yeah.
That's pretty cool. What are you doing, Sam? Going to work with Quest to, you know, work on a film?
Yeah, pretty much.
So how good is it also, I mean, just from a woman's standpoint, this year at Tribeca Festival, 70% of all the films here are directed by women.
It's unprecedented and incredible. I'm so happy to see the progress going in this direction. And my committee that I am judging on is an all-women's committee. So it's just... it's great to have these conversations and open conversations and see stories by women, for women, people who haven't had opportunities that deserve them, finally get them.
You know what? It's the work that you do, the work that you've done. It's the work of trailblazers like Jane Rosenthal that keep the train moving forward. And I congratulate you, and best of everything to you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. We're here at the world premiere of the league. We're here with Dave Cerelnik from Radical Media, one of our producers on the film. And, of course, the world-renowned Sam Pillard, today's director for the movie. Guys, how are you?
Wonderful. Thanks for having talking to us.
Absolutely. And such an important film. Such an important film. I don't think a lot of people really realize what the Negro League not only meant to baseball, but to America, as far as economics for the black community, as far as, you know, dividing the race line in baseball. Just tell me in your own words, what drew you to finally sharing this story?
Well, for me as a young man, teenager, I knew a little bit about the Negro Leagues. I knew about Josh Gibson and particularly Satchel Paige. But now, you know, I felt like I've learned so much more. We were able to really dig into the story and find the level of complexity and learn about people like Effa Manley, the first black woman to own a team like the Newark Eagles. You know, to learn about Gus Greenlee and Cum Posey, and to really dig into all these different aspects that Rube Foster, basically the idea that he wanted to start this Negro National League in the early part of the 20th century, is a phenomenal story of an entrepreneur who understood the importance of creating this league.
It's funny, just right before this movie premiered tonight, just a few weeks ago, Hinkle Field in New Jersey just reopened, the home of the New York Cubans, the New York Black Yankees, so this is couldn't be any more perfect. And David, I know for you as a producer, part of Radical Media, you guys are having a huge festival this year. This, Ron Delsner Presents.
It's Tribeca's always been a home to us. I happen to live in Tribeca, and Radical Media is just one neighborhood away, and we are a New York-based company, and we've always been part of New York, so premiering films at Tribeca Film Festival has always been very, very special, and the support they're showing for this particular film is absolutely amazing. And the film, you know, I think it's the film for baseball fans and for non-baseball fans. If you want to know about America and you want to know about an aspect and a story that most people don't know, this film is for you. And if you're a baseball fan and you've spent a lot of time watching baseball, playing baseball, the history of baseball, we hope that you're going to find things in here that you didn't know. And we were just talking with Harold Reynolds, you know, from MLB TV, great baseball player, all-star. And he was telling us that when he watched the film, he was learning things. Yeah. So that made us pretty happy that, you know, someone like Harold Reynolds is learning something from this film as well.
Right, and he's the baseball encyclopedia.
That's right. Right,
you know?
That's right.
Sam, one last question for you. I know, obviously, you've done a ton of work with Spike Lee. When you're editing one of his films, is there really that much to do, or are you just like, all right, Spike, you're good, here we go?
There's always a lot to do when you edit a film, man. No matter if it's Spike Lee or Ernest Dickerson, there's always a lot of work.
All right. We won't tell Spike. It's just Spike. Oh, no, Spike, it's good. It's good. Guys, thank you so much. Once again, we're here on the red carpet, the North America premiere of the league here at Tribeca 2023.
Well, it really was the brainchild of Mario Lopez a few years ago, and I came out to it maybe a year after they were developing it. I hope they, through watching both episodes, can appreciate Oscar, his humanity, his vulnerability, you know, and have give a little bit of context to how his life unfolded. It is a raw, unvarnished, candid story portrait of Oscar De La Hoya in his own words.
Oscar has been a friend of mine for a long time, and it's a story I've always wanted to tell, and to finally kind of convince him and get him on board took some time, but he was at a point in his life when he really wanted to share it, and partnering with my friend Mark Wahlberg, we've always wanted to work on something together, and this seemed like the perfect project to sort of launch it, and I think him turning 50 had a lot to do with it, and I looked back, and it turned out excellent and very compelling, and I'm anxious for people to see it. I think they'll learn a lot about him. I think they'll also learn a lot about themselves, that it's never too late to sort of start over and to continue to grow as an individual, no matter how old you get. We all mess up, but it's a matter of kind of learning from those mistakes and being honest with yourself and moving forward. Well, this is an honor. I mean, I grew up loving this festival and to be able to be here and be with my wife and to have a film kick it off and to do it with my friends, you know, it doesn't get better than that.
It really is an honor. I mean, being invited and having a documentary about my life, a tell-all, was pretty nerve-wracking to do at first. I didn't know what to expect. I just wanted to be transparent, be honest, just lay it all on the line. And that's exactly what producer Mark Wahlberg and Mario, that have been my friends forever. And so I trusted them with telling my story in a very authentic way. And that was very important to me. So I'm very happy with the outcome.
David sent me the script, and I was offered the opportunity by the writer, novelist, director, actor, and extraordinaire musician David Duchovny. So all I had to do was read the book, and I jumped. So it was easy. It was so easy. I was so excited to be a part of it, and it's been it was a dream shooting it. I play David's character's son, and I come back into his life late. And like a lot of us, kind of due to cancer at the end of someone's life. And it's just about a quick father and son buddy story with a backdrop of baseball and a little love story thrown in and a little love letter to New York and Jersey.
Bucky Dent, which is actually very important to the story. It is a screenplay written by David Duchovny. It was originally a screenplay. He then turned it into a novel and then turned it back into a screenplay. It's a really beautiful story, essentially about a father and a son who are estranged. And the father's dying of cancer, and he and the son kind of try to find their way back to each other. I play the, basically his death nurse, to sort of help guide him toward the inevitable. I hope that when my time comes, I have somebody as compassionate as my character in this film, so yeah. My own dad was actually dying of cancer at the time, and when David asked me to do the film, I just knew that it was the right time to do it, even though everything was hard and coming all together at once. Once I read the novel, I realized that it was just the right job at the right time, and to have David ask me to do it himself was just really special. I've been a fan of his work for a really long time, not only his work on television, but also his writing. And so to be a part of this is really special to me. I know he's been trying to bring it to life for a really long time. To feel handpicked by him is really, it's an honor.
It was a screenplay I wrote a long time ago, and I couldn't get it made. And then I wrote it as a novel, told the story that way. And then I rewrote it as a screenplay again and was able to get it made probably 15 years since I came up with the idea. I learned about directing just working with really good directors on, you know, shows like The X-Files and Californication. I mean, Rob Bowman, Chris Carter, David Nutter, Kim Manners. So, I mean, I've been learning about directing as an actor for a long time. But it's always new. There's disasters every day, and you got to put out fires, basically. It feels great. I'm from New York. This is a Northeast Corridor movie. It takes place in Jersey, so it's the right place for the movie.
It's our 30th anniversary of A Bronx Tale. We have a new, restored, beautiful 4K print, so that's really exciting to see today for the first time. And it's also the beginning of our celebration of Bob's 80th birthday. Bronx Tale is a film that resonates with audiences almost more today than it did when we made it.
I found his memory. It was just that we did it, you know, that we got, Bob had a dream that he wanted to direct and that we could finally find something and he got to do it. What's really heartwarming is to see that over the years, audiences have found it and it's become so beloved and, you know, that's really, you know, very, very proud of that. As a producer and working on a film, you want to find something that resonates with you, that still, you know, I watch it now, it still gives me the chills. I can still cry in it. It's, you know, it's just a beautiful story, and I'm proud of that. And
you know, really proud that we got to bring it to the screen and can bring it back to audiences, and hopefully new audiences will find it again.
When I heard this was happening, I was more excited than to any premiere I have ever been to. Like, it's very special, and I can't even believe it's 30 years late. I think Bob and Chaz still look amazing. I think everybody still looks great. I'm very proud to be a part of this film because it's such a classic and people love it, and it's so many people's favorite film. I think my fondest memory of that audition is, well, first walking into the room and meeting Bob and Chaz. But I think my fondest memory is walking into the theater at the premiere with my kids and feeling really proud because I'm a single parent. And I felt like I was showing my kids without saying it to follow your dream. This is something important in life, to believe in yourself and follow your dreams. And my kids got to witness this, and I think it affected them too.
Went by like this. Time goes by fast. Just working with Bob and, you know, learning from him and learning from all the people on the set and Chaz, and just like, it was such a great and awesome experience. Everybody was so nice. If I wasn't in A Bronx Tale, I don't know where I'd be right now. That he is amazing at everything he does. And just watching him, I mean, I did a couple of movies with him, so I watched him act and I watched his technique, and just him directing me, he gave me so many pointers. Like when I punched the guy, I wanted to say something. He was like, don't say anything, just do it. And that sits with me to today when I do films. You don't have to say anything, just do it. And he taught me to, like, you got to get into the scene before they say action. And I'm grateful for it. It was like on the job training.
You know what? Sometimes I just can't. But now when I'm back doing this again, talking about Bronx Tale, it brings back like I was doing it then. You know, obviously, the Tribeca Film Festival is one of the most prestigious festivals in the world. And to close it, and to close it with Bob De Niro and us doing a Q&A at the end, I'm very excited by that. I think my fondest memory about making the movie was when I saw Bob De Niro do the scene with Francis Capra, with a young boy, and saying the working man's a sucker. And when the little boy says that, and Bob says, no, I'm the tough guy. And I was watching it, and I was just watching it, and I remember I started to cry because it was my father talking to me. And I thought that was the best scene in the movie then, and I still think it is the best scene in the movie. It just connects with people. It connects with anyone who has a dream about wasted talent, about wanting the best for your children, and father, son. It's just a great story. Oh, no, as I was writing it, I would perform it. That's why it was a one-person show. And finally, when I performed it for the first time, and people stood up. I mean, I'm about to do my 1,020th performance soon. Right after Bronx Tale, then I got the part in Bullets Over Broadway, which I got nominated for the Academy Award, and Usual Suspects, and I've been on a roll now for 35 years. So, and I always say I thank Robert De Niro for giving me my shot.
Well, I'm very happy to screen it here, especially at the Beacon. It's a great theater, and means a lot. You know, the festival we started 22 years ago. It's 22 years have passed, and it's still here, and it's great to know that it's still part of a thing in New York, because I've always felt that's the most important part of it, that it becomes the fabric of New York. Tradition goes on and on. I was looking for something to do. I didn't know what I was doing. I saw Chaz's one-man show. I said, I have to jump in and do something. And I liked it, and I thought I could do something with it, and that's what happened.
We're here at the Tribeca Festival 2023, the world premiere of Rolling Loud right here. We've got a Knicks legend.
Woo!
We've got Mr. Dick Barnett here. Dick, how you feeling, sir?
Good.
It is such an honor to be here. What's it like celebrating your teammate here at the Tribeca Festival tonight?
I'm in awe. Okay. Okay.
So when you were hanging out in the locker room, did you think that, you know, he'd be the senator one day?
No, but with Bradley, with his resume, I'm not surprised.
So starting out in the Midwest and then having your journey, the journey that you've had so far, did you expect that this is how you were going to have, like, your path be?
All I did is go day to day, do the best I could, and whatever I did, follow my interests, my passions, which were basketball and then politics. And I was always interested in the creative aspect of life. And so I wanted to tell the story about not just the Senate and basketball, but the things we all encounter every day. I remember I asked one group of people, what was this about? And they said, it's about all of us. And I think there are things in this about everybody, from forgiveness to triumph to loss. And it's a special act of, what can I say? I'm just happy to have done it. And it's there now and hope people watch it.
Well, my research on Bill Bradley started in 1965 with a great little book called A Sense of Where You Are. Paperback. I still have it somewhere, dog-eared and, you know, all kinds of notes on it. And, you know, you sort of get like a little bit of imprinting at a young age. And this guy from Princeton, and he's the best player in the country. And, like, I gotta follow him, see where he goes. Never thought it would lead to here, but here we are.
You have been involved in the television industry, and you've done some interesting things. So you're like a puppeteer. You do really cool things, right? What made you say yes to this project? And did you use any, like, puppets? Was there anything, creative or fun, or no?
Good Lord, no.
No, basketballs, yes?
No, nothing.
No, just, nothing. No.
You know, I saw this, and I was asked to take a look at what Bill did months ago, and it just turned out that I had some comments, and he seemed to like them, and so I spent a couple of months coaching him prior to the shooting. So, and we worked well together.
It seems like a really good crew. You could tell when people, like, greet each other on the red carpet, that there's like a definite connection.
Yeah, they're good people here. They're very good people. You know, otherwise I wouldn't do it. I have no interest in working with people who are not good.
So I got to ask you now, you know, actually, obviously your home is New York City.
Yeah.
What's it like, that vibe? Look, this is a New York Knicks city. It always has been. It always will be. You know, you sat on top of the castle with the team. Do you still feel that love from the fans every day when you're walking down the street?
Less so now, because it's been 50 years, right, since the last championship. So a lot of people have had to love or dead. But there are others who I still feel a deep affection for the city and for the experiences that I had here as a Knick, and for the joy I shared with my teammates and for their friendship.
And you think you're ready to come back and help us win a championship here?
I think I'm a couple of days too long, okay?
Mike, I just wanted to thank you. On behalf of every person in this country, a couple of years ago we went through something called COVID.
I remember.
And we had nothing. We had nothing. We didn't even have a 7-Eleven to go to. But every Sunday we had this beacon on our television called The Last Dance. And from the bottom of my heart, I have to thank you for that program. And what was it like getting into it with Michael and Dennis and Phil and the whole crew?
It was a long time coming. I mean, Michael was reluctant and spent 20 years resisting, and then finally, just right time, right place. I think he was at a place in his life. He had a new family. I kind of appeal to his sense of legacy. You know, there are people showing up in my office that wear your shoes who've never seen you play, and maybe it's time. And so he agreed, and he was a delight to work with. You know, people said, oh, he controlled the content. No, he didn't. He let us alone. We told the story. He embraced it. He wanted us to tell the truth. I mean, let's face it, he was extremely candid. Nobody questions that, right? I think it was really a cathartic exercise for him, and he's very grateful about it. So it was one of those things, you know, you don't wish a pandemic on the world, but, you know, there wasn't much else on, and we were glad to at least fill the void a little bit.
You were our vaccine, you know?
Thank you, Mike. Oh, that's a good one. What made you decide to start down this path? Why did you choose this as your profession?
My profession? I've always wanted to be a director, and I was a performer for many years, harboring the desire to direct but not having the courage to move forward until Jim Henson supported me.
Do you on the shoulder, or what was that moment?
No, he gave me the opportunity. He asked me to direct Dark Crystal with him, which was which is like a $200 million film, and I've never directed a movie in my life. So you have to have somebody who's a mentor like Jim, who believes in what you're doing and senses your value.
I'm just in awe of you, and that's why I'm just like standing here smiling. Usually I have questions. Yeah.
I'm in awe of you. You know, you want to, here goes. Ready? I'm going to look at you and go, ready?
People are going to absolutely love it. And you had a lot of your teammates come out here tonight on the red carpet to show their love for you, too.
Yeah. No, we had three senators and three Knicks, so it's pretty good.
Partridge in a pear tree.
If we had to go 3-on-3, the three senators versus the three Knicks, what do you think? What do you think?
That is a great question.
I think Clyde could still throw. I think he could still ball.
Yeah, maybe it should be the three senators against Clyde.
Chelsea and I have been friends for a really long time, and she was a writer on Parks and Rec, and she told me she was doing this, and I was thrilled to be involved. And so we've been working on it for a really long time, and been there since the beginning, and happy to have a night like tonight. It's awesome.
I play Sheldon, who it's a movie about a community theater, and I run the theater. And I played it as a lazy guy that doesn't want things to interrupt his not doing anything. Chelsea Peretti had me in mind and just gave me the part. So it was one of those sweet ones. Yeah, I didn't have to try. I just got it.
My role in this film, I play a theater kid turned villain ultimately, and I kind of spar with Chelsea trying to get a hold of this production that she's putting on. I got involved. Chelsea, actually, I think it was maybe first through my agent, and then Chelsea had DM'd me, and I had heard about the project for a while, and then it was like maybe a few weeks, like a month before, and then I sent in a tape, and yeah, it was like, I mean, it was such an immediate yes. I heard like everyone involved, and I was like, this is ultimately my dream. I was so nervous, but yeah, it was like the best month of my life. I think what I really love about the movie is it is like kind of this story of this woman just like getting, I guess it's like a little bit of sins of the father. Like she gets all of these like things thrown at her after this man who like rightly leaves and gets like kicked out of this theater troupe as the director. I feel like, yeah, it's like a beautiful depiction of maybe some of like the disgusting things that women have to deal with when they're put in places of power. And I think it's done in like a funny, obviously, but kind of dark and satirical way that I think is really genius, and I think Chelsea is, yeah, I think people are hopefully really going to like it and definitely laugh.
I play Thimberly. I am, this was a new turn for me. I got to play someone who is a little older than me. Usually in Hollywood, you're always trying to be younger than yourself. And I really liked it, and I have to say, you know, while most people my age are trying to figure out how to look younger, I feel like I could corner the market on the grotesque old lady. So I'm kind of like, I hope this is a new beginning for me. I think that audience members will take away at least a few new people that they didn't know about because it is such an ensemble cast. And also just seeing Chelsea in a lead role, I think people will really love that because, you know, I don't know that she's had the opportunity to do that in full effect. So I'm really excited for that.
Oh, I get to play part of the avant-garde theater group. It's such a hilarious, zany film about relevant issues today. And yeah, so you'll see me as part of the avant-garde theater group in competition with hers.
I actually am friends with Chelsea Peretti, who wrote, directed, and stars in it. And so I've like known about this movie since she was writing it, like for the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. And so when it was finally time to like shoot it and get it made, she asked if I would be in it. I think she was always writing the character for me. So yeah, I'm friends with the writer. That's basically how.
It's really fun to be here with just some of the funniest people working today who I love.
My cast is all geniuses. I feel like crying. Oh no. This is what I'm trying not to get too emotional because I'm like, if people don't like the movie, then it's all over the top. But anyway, I love my cast. It was very fun. There's a lot of technical things that I learned that I will execute in my next film. And coverage, well, I already knew this, but it was a very large cast. I felt like I achieved the goals I set out largely, but I also learned a lot.
Yeah, I play Ron LaRue. He is the father of Eric LaRue. And Eric committed a horrible crime. And the movie takes place after this, the horrific incident. And Ron and Janice, his wife, are struggling with just trying to make sense of what happened and how this horrific event could take place and trying to figure out who their son really is. And Ron, his way of coping with it is to, he tries to make sense of the whole thing. And for him, an escape has become religion. I hope that they will be invested in all these characters and the story that Michael Shannon, our director, is trying to tell. I try to avoid telling people too much, not only about the movie, but also about how I want them to perceive it or what I want them to walk out of the theater thinking or feeling. When I read it, it was an emotional experience. It's sad. It's confusing. It's heartbreaking in many ways. So, I hope we were able to capture that a little bit from the beautiful script.
I play one of the mothers of one of the boys who was murdered. So a really hard role, just in terms of life. The film, I think, is so incredible because when I read the script, I thought, oh, my God, I've never read this material treated this way, you know. I think what Brett did with this script is really, really special. I have known Mike for years and years and years, and so he just asked, would you like to do it? And I was like, well, yeah, send me the script. And I read the script, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm excited is probably the wrong word because, it's such difficult material, but I do feel like I feel so honored to have been a part of it because I love it. I love the script, and getting to work on a script of this quality and with such incredible people was really amazing. I will be, first of all, very, very curious to see how people respond. What I hope, if anything, is that people really walk away feeling like every human is deserving of love and mercy, and that we're living in our society in a way right now that just doesn't give love and mercy to people on a daily basis, and that's hurting us as a whole.
I just felt like there was so much in the script that meant something to me, that was important to me, things that I have been thinking about for years, things that I care about. And so I don't know. I just kind of saw it when I read it. I thought if somebody else did it, they'd screw it up. So I knew I had to do it myself. We did it at our theater in Chicago back in 2002. And so, yeah, it's over 20 years. Unfortunately, it's still quite relevant, considering the subject matters. That's kind of a sad thing. But I have very deep relationships with all the people that I work with at my theater in Chicago, and Brett's one of my favorites, so I was happy to work with him. David Lynch is one of my favorite directors, and you'd be damned if you ever get him to tell you anything about his movies, so I'm going to follow his lead.
On true events, and I play Spanky, and Bobby Jacob Elordi, he goes around and, like, he hitches a ride with me and Zachary Quinto. And he, we're going on tour, so I'm a monkey. And I'm, like, a tour monkey and stuff like that. And he hitches a ride, and I go on tour, and he's a serial killer. So he, like, kills people on the way. So, yeah.
Producing partner and I, we found the story in 2005. And we tried, it was a book that was written by a professor back in Kalamazoo College. And so we, you know, we tried to, you know, making films takes a long time. And so eventually we took one chapter in this book, which is the story of our film. Oh, I'm so excited. I've never really premiered at a film festival, so I'm honored, excited, and hope everyone likes it. There's a lot of pressure, obviously.
My sister and I, we play twins in the film, and we auditioned just from our agent, and then we got to do the callback over Zoom together. It was so much fun. And then we found out that we got the role. It was so great. So much fun.
I got invited to be in it, and I read it, and I was fascinated by the fact that it's based on a true story, first of all. I was fascinated by the component of the chimpanzee, which is a huge part of the story, and I was a little resistant at first, and then I met with the director and spoke to the producers about the plan to integrate this this character, essentially, the chimpanzee, and I was so impressed by their game plan and by the way it was executed, so I felt really drawn to it. I felt really drawn to Jeffrey's vision for what the film could be, and Jacob, of course, I was excited by the possibility of working with him, and so it just made sense.
So congratulations. I saw you walk in with a very handsome man. I know. Is it great to have your real family celebrating you as well as your cast here tonight?
Yeah, I mean, everyone here that I know personally has touched me in some way to give me support, offer an ear, let me cry, let me scream. So I'm so grateful to everyone that's here. I really am.
I am really good friends with Jennifer Esposito, who thought of it, created it, wrote it, directed it. Look at, I'm tearing up. And starred in it. And it is a point of view of a kind of story we've seen 100,000 times, but only from the male point of view. And so that she came up with this and felt like it was so important, which it is, and it's starring young girls and her family and the woman, the female in the family, and what she's going through. I mean, again, to write, direct, and star in it, and we have never seen a story like this ever from this point of view. I'm so proud of her.
What was your favorite scene that you got to be in together?
I think the gun scene in the car.
Yeah, that was a really good scene. I liked the dinner scene because I like eating food, but I liked the dinner scene.
So, Emily, tell us about one of your happiest memories as being part of this cast.
Oh, my gosh. You know, it actually is easy for me to say. The happiest memory was filming Christmas dinner with this family. It was mostly improvised, that scene, so we didn't have to worry so much about necessarily a big dramatic moment. We were all together at this table in this gaudy, beautiful 80s Christmas dream house. And there were plates of clams and, like, strange food I'd never tried before, but also amazing food on the table. And we shared it all together and laughed. And it was just like having Christmas with family, but it was on set.
And what role do you play in this?
I play Angela.
Nice. Yeah. Love it. And anything in your life that kind of prepared you for this particular role? Like eating, like, Nona sauce or anything fun?
I think having brothers. Having brothers, you have to have a thick skin, and I hadn't reached down and brought that out in a while, and that was kind of fun.
All right, Charlie, one question for you. What was your best experience in this film?
My best, this is a tough one, let's see. I think, like, so there was a scene where we at the church, it was a funeral, and it was, like, a really cool experience. There was, like, an organ playing, and it was like, I felt like it was in the moment, so it was just very sick. So yeah.
What are you looking forward to this evening?
first of all, getting reunited with all the cast members and, of course, Jen, and then just watching the movie.
Congratulations to you and continued success. You know, I know that I looked at your IMDb. You've gotten some really great roles. And so I know that you've got a, you know, long career ahead of you. Is there any role you want to play? Something that you're most looking forward to?
Oh, most definitely. That's actually really interesting. Nobody's asked me that.
Nobody's asked you that? Well, thank goodness. Out of 29 interviews, Emily, I asked you a good question. So what type of role would you really enjoy playing?
I always gravitate towards a little bit of the strange and unusual, I suppose, in my film style and things that I personally enjoy. Like, I would love to work with a Tim Burton, a Robert Eggers. So to do something in that sort of almost film noir on the Eggers side to a sort of fun gothic, to do something like that one day and really give into that, that'd be awesome.
Soak up that lighting, right? Like the contrast of the dark and the light. I love that. Is there like a certain memory for you that you like to celebrate when you go to sleep at night? You're like, wow, I got a chance to do that and look at me now.
Every project holds like a special place in my heart. I honestly have been so lucky to have such positive experiences on set. But I think that this is probably one of the highlights that I'd have to say is what I think about now. Yeah.
Very, very nice. When you're acting, how do you now prepare for your best roles?
How do I prepare? You know, it just depends what it is. If it's dramatic and important in the world, I probably spend a lot more time on it than I do if it's a character that's fun and funny and that we've seen a couple of times. I sit with the script, and I wish I had some big actory formula, but I don't.
You do what you do because you're you, and you do it so well. I'm actually a fan of yours. I like your work a lot. What are your friends at your school saying about you now that you've gotten a chance to hit the red carpet?
I kind of like to keep it on the low key, but my brother, he's taking some photos. He's going to send it to them, and I just can't wait to see the reactions.
Not to take away from tonight, but we want more. So can we have more, please?
More of
you. Another project. I was talking to Kathy tonight, and you know, she's such a fan of yours, too. I think we just all celebrate you. You're doing great things. And what could we expect from you on the horizon?
Well, I was going to say hopefully they'll let me direct, but I've already proved no one has to let me do anything, because if you keep waiting for people to let you do anything, especially in this business as a female, it's like you'll be waiting for a very long time. So, honestly, I just want to keep making wonderful work. Like, this was, I wanted to go to film school. I couldn't afford it. I put myself through acting school. This is what I always wanted to do, and I feel like I'm finally where I should be, so it feels nice.
You said yes to yourself, and you wrote your own permission slip. Nice to see you again. Congratulations. Be well.
The script was something that was around for a while that I read. There was a moment when we were going to maybe read it in my writing group. Honestly, I'm thrilled it ended up here. I had no idea. And it's a beautiful, beautiful story. It's very well written. You got a terrific cinematographer and, a great cast. So it's really beautiful. I have not seen it yet. So
I am the son of Billy Porter and Luke Evans in this movie. My agent, he sent me an audition. Me and my mom like read over the whole script. We loved it, so we decided to audition for it, and look where I am now. It was definitely fun. I loved meeting all the other people, and I loved doing the scenes. It was just a very engaging and fun experience. I feel like love conquers everything. Because the real movie is really about like these two parents that are going through a divorce, but they have to stay strong for their kid. It's so surreal. I mean, I never thought I would actually be here. So fun, you know? Super cool.
It is a divorce child custody drama. Follows a interracial gay couple and their 8-year-old son. And you know, it's beautiful, it's touching, and it's difficult. You know, relationships are difficult, life is difficult, and there's hope.
It's a story that we've all heard of or been a part of, and it's a universal story about love and how it can sometimes break apart and then get put back together in a different way. It's a story about two people that love each other who then fall out of love and go through the painful steps of divorce with a child that they have to then, you know, go through a custody battle. And, you know, it's a story that's relatable to so many people. We all know someone who's been through some kind of breakup, a divorce, and sadly it's very common. But we've never really seen it told from this angle, even though, you know, gay men are also dealing with, you know, we've been lucky enough to be able to get married. Lucky, I mean, we're entitled to get married. But, you know, marriage is sometimes ends in divorce. And so it's that part of the story, too.
I hope they take away a feeling of hope and optimism that it's possible to overcome our differences for the sake of something greater good, and also a greater understanding of queer people and their experiences and their humanity, that there are people like the rest of us going through life's joys and struggles.
Joining us now is Anthony White. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. So I shared with you off camera that I grew up singing in a patriotic singing group called the Futures of America, where we were the 97%, meaning 97% of kids are good. Yeah, it's just sometimes the 3% that aren't so great. But you've got 97% of greatness going on where you are, right? I want to know what your personal why is, Anthony. Why did you decide to take on this challenge?
Well, my drive with the Detroit Youth Choir comes from, actually, we're here in New York, right? It actually came from the Boys Choir of Harlem.
Okay.
The Boys Choir of Harlem gave me inspiration. Even when I was a young kid, I wanted to move to New York to join the Boys Choir of Harlem, but I couldn't because my parents wouldn't allow me.
Okay.
So what I did was I carried on the tradition of their director, Walter Turnbull, Dr. Walter Turnbull, and took over another great organization named the Detroit Children's Concert Choir, and I turned it into the Detroit Youth Choir. So my passion comes from actually the young people in the Boys Choir of Harlem. But what really drives me is that I am able to tell our story, tell a story like this docuseries. This is our story. And this is a true gift from Director Rudy. He's right next to me. This is a true gift for everybody to see. I can't give nothing away, but I want everybody to just check out this docuseries, and they'll fall in love with DYC all over again.
Joining us now is Sarah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You were certainly dressed, colorful, upbeat. It was a rainy day, but now the sun's out.
I know. It's a little bit of a rain boot.
You're looking awesome.
I'm dressed for our choir.
I love that. Well, welcome. How are you today? Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to bring this out into the world.
And you have distribution on Disney Plus, which is also a big excitement, right? I mean, you must have been, were you thrilled, or did you know ahead of time as you were putting it together that this is where it was going to be?
It came to me as a Disney project, which was, I don't even know how to explain it. When they're like, do you want to do something for Disney Plus? I was like,
who, me? Right?
I'm like, yes? Like, how fast can I say yes? You know, so, yeah, very excited.
Now, did your parents fall in love with you all over again? Yes. They must be so proud. I want to know what your family's reaction has been, Anthony.
Well, my family, you know, my mom, she passed away in 2019, right after our first Golden Buzzer. But my dad is back at home, and he loves the Detroit Youth Choir. And my wife and her family and everybody, we all just love these kids. I mean, they just really surprise me every time I look at them. But they're, my family is also my drive.
Yes.
They're the reason why I do what I do. Because it's not that many young black males doing a lot in our city. There is some, but there's not some. So,
you are a leader.
Yeah.
Anthony, that's wonderful. What did you love best about this collaboration with so many different creative talents from all over the world, really?
Well, I mean, I think, like, what was wonderful about this is really just being able to showcase, youth who are really kind of striving to make their mark. And I think to be able to kind of celebrate their talent on a global platform like Disney Plus is just such a thrill for all of us.
So congratulations. So not only do you have choir, now I find out you have Santana. Yeah. And you had one other thing in Tribeca. Yeah, what was that?
I had a short film called The Translators. That was in Tribeca X, which we actually won, which was pretty amazing. It's been an amazing week.
Congratulations. So obviously you haven't been sleeping either. What did you love best about this particular project?
I mean, there were so many moments throughout the course of making this where I would pinch myself because I'm sitting there looking at archive footage of legendary Carlos Santana, legendary Woodstock footage, and I was like, I thought I was getting punked for a lot of it because who let me do this? But it was just time after time, just really amazing moments where I just feel very grateful to be able to share these stories. Going through this like 50-year career and seeing all these things was just amazing to have my hands on all of it and be able to watch all of it and create this story and life of this person who not only sought musicality but spirituality and all the other things that make you tick as a human. To watch that journey with him, with the footage in my hands was absolutely amazing. I was searching through the archives and I found some unmarked tapes. I put these tapes in and they're Carlos filming himself and talking to the camera and singing and playing the guitar to the camera, and it became the baseline of our film because I wanted you to be in his hands, in his voice, in his heart the entire time.
You, since you have been doing so many different things, do you do a little each day on different projects, or do you do one project, complete it, and then the next? I want to know what your style is.
I'm going to let you in on how my brain works, and it might be like serial killer stuff, but I've realized when I was younger that my brain is like an 8-lane highway, and if I only have one car on it, it's just sort of banging into all the walls, but if I have something filling all the lanes, I can actually think. So I'm working on every project, every day, all the time. They all, I have a lot of through lines in all of my projects, and it's leading with humanity. So stories about Carlos, I mean, he was such a big part of my life growing up and such an amazing role model of somebody who looked like me, who broke all these barriers, who did all the things that weren't expected of him and broke all the molds. Match with stories about choir, match with stories about translators, because I want to find the humanity in every story. So they connect in a weird way. Yeah.
I kind of feel that. It's almost like your brain's so smart, like I feel the energy. And I know you have a question for Rudy, too.
I wouldn't say smart.
No?
I would never.
Okay, how about, can we say talented?
We can, I'll let you say it.
All right. Talented. There we go.
So Rudy, like I've seen you at the choir premiere, I've seen you around this week, and there's one thing I noticed about you, you're always bringing the heat on your feet. Can you explain what's going on those feet of yours tonight?
I am a pretty dull person in a lot of ways, other than being incredibly funny. But what I do,
and
unbelievably humble, and unbelievable. But the one thing I try to have a little accent with is my shoes. Like, you'll see me, if you see me on any given day outside of premieres, I'm wearing the same thing every single day. The only thing that shifts is my shoes. It's always like a hoodie and jeans, like every single day, but like shoes is the only thing that I...
And yeah. I'm thinking next year at Tribeca, we're going to see you in front of the camera. Deal? Yes?
With that humor,
I think that's a possibility.
Is anyone casting? Because I could use a job.
Sure.
Yeah. Hire him.
I met Carlos through a friend of mine who's a very old school manager called Ed Gerard, and he was working with Ashley, and he brought me to meet with Carlos in his house. And I've been, like, as a Mexican, I've been a fan since I'm like, actually he was my first concert. I took a train, that, literally a train from Mexico City to the north to go and see him. So it was amazing to have a moment as an artist, as a filmmaker that I am, to meet Carlos, and that's where it started. The magic of Rudy, our director, and Imagine, I think Carlos felt safe with us and connected with the team, and it was just great to experience a little bit of his life. The magic of being a human being that can change, things with his own drum beat. Carlos came from the middle of Mexico, and he kind of, like, changed his life through his will and and it's magic.
I have a feeling that my mom and my father are pulling some strings on the other side for this to happen, because they want to share how they sculpture me, my life, with their morals, their values, and their principles. And so this is more than just a guitar player. This is more of a person who believes with passion and conviction that each person can make a difference in the world, bringing light and divinity into the table, because there's too much shuck and jive, phony baloney out there, you know, and we need the real resonance of light and divinity. It was wonderful. They were very cooperative with what I wanted to do, because, you know, most documentaries are about, I want to say losers, but there's for a lot of victim mentality, you know, and like, and so I wanted to make a documentary because there's women and men that I admire a lot. And I feel that there's certain women and men who raise the bar as far as like high consciousness and principles and the way they behave themselves in a way that is commendable, pillars in the community as far as like rescuing people from themselves, because most people are not happy unless they're miserable, you know? So I wanted this documentary, which is a documentary about a person who, since I was a child, I believe that there is a way to put aside the lie of being a wretched sinner. You know, I never believed that anyone is a wretched sinner. Since we're human and we have, as Coretta King used to say, we have feet of clay, but we're capable to create and manifest blessings and miracles, you know. And I feel really grateful because they complied with my request, you know. My request was like, I need to have a say-so on beginning, middle, and end how my life is going to be portrayed on this documentary. We believe that there is a need for a frequency channel like Arthur Ashe, Dr. J, you know, Maya Angelou, Dolores Huerta, Mother Teresa. There's people who are here to uplift the consciousness of people, you know, and that's what I want to be more than anything else. Santana is a safety net to rescue people from themselves, because most people are not happy unless they're miserable. And I want to show them, like, stick around, you know, don't check out. The best part of your life is still ahead, it's around the corner, you know. So I want my life to be a celebration of my light and my divinity. And by doing that, I can demonstrate to other people, somos iguales, we're the same light, you know. There's a saying, I'll conclude this thing by saying, may the heavens open up and the angels bless each and every one with the deep awareness of their own light and divinity. That's what's happening.
This is Donna Drake. Happy journeys.
We would like to thank you for joining us on the Donna Drake Show. We can't wait for you to tune in for the next episode. In the meantime, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks again. And until next time, remember to live it up with Donna Drake.